Welcome to the Bob Harden Show, bringing you news and commentary to keep you informed and enjoying life on the Paradise Coast. And now, here's your host, Bob Harden.
Good morning. Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the good folks at Johnson's Air Conditioning. Johnson's Air Conditioning is Naples' longest established air conditioning company. I hope you'll find out more by looking at the website, johnsonsairconditioning.com. Give them a call. They do a great job. johnsonsairconditioning.com. Also by Naples Illustrated, bringing you infinite luxury lifestyles. The website is naplesillustrated.com. We have terrific guests for today's show, including Kathleen Pasadomo, our state senator. We'll find out what's new with Boo up in Madison, Wisconsin. Boo Mortensen will be joining us. Seton Motley is the founder and president of Less Government. And we'll be talking about the Biden campaign. And Larry Reed, the president emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education, will be joining us as well. We'll be talking about a Swedish nightingale who sang her way to fame and fortune in America. It is August the 11th, and on this day in 1965, in predominantly black Watts neighborhood of Watts, Los Angeles, racial tensions reached a breaking point after two white policemen scuffled with a black motorist suspected of drunken driving. A crowd of spectators gathered near the corner of Avalon Boulevard and 116th Street to watch the arrest and soon grew angry by what they believed to be yet another incident of racially motivated abuse by the police. An uprising soon began, spurred by the residents of Watts who were embittered after years of economic and political isolation. The rioters eventually rang a 50-square-mile area of South Central Los Angeles, looting stores, torching buildings, and beating whites as snipers fired at police and white and firefighters. Finally, with the assistance of thousands of National Guardsmen, order was restored on August the 16th. Wow, long time. The 5 days of violence led to 34 dead, 1,032 injured, nearly 4,000 arrested, and $40 million worth of property destroyed. The Watts Riot, also known as the Watts Rebellion, foreshadowed the many rebellions to occur in ensuing years during the 1967 Detroit riots, the Newark riots, and other violence. And, of course, we're seeing some of that violence play out today for different purposes and some for the same. So interesting. 114 new cases of COVID-19, no additional deaths in Cuyahoga County yesterday. The seven-day average new cases at 90 compared to 220 on July the 13th. So we've seen a big drop in the average number of cases. Testing goes up. Total cases is 10,448. With 63,235 total tests, and his total COVID-19 related deaths remains at 136, which I believe the number is quite inflated because of died in a motorcycle crash, COVID-19. A lot of that going on. Monday, there were 130 COVID-19 patients being treated in Collier County hospitals. The county has about 20% of its total hospital beds available and 39.3% of its adult ICU beds available. So, again, flattening the curve, what's the focus? It's just making sure the healthcare is not overwhelmed, and it certainly is not at this point. Interesting note, President Vladimir Putin of Russia says the country has become the first to approve a coronavirus vaccine for use, and the vaccine developed by an institute in Moscow has proven to be efficient, adding that one of his daughters has already taken it, but the vaccine is yet to enter phase 3 trials, the final stage of testing that can take months and involve thousands of people. So we'll see how this all plays out, but apparently it's going to be distributed in Russia. Another report on COVID-19, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Children's Hospital Association found more than 97,000 U.S. children tested positive for COVID-19 in the last 2 weeks of July. The findings, using data from 49 states, come to some school districts across the country as they reopen with teachers and staff and students. It's just curious to me that this data comes out at this point in time when schools are about to open. Most of the cases, of course, are very mild. However, another report from the CDC found that Hispanic children are 8 times more likely and black children 5 times more likely to be hospitalized from the virus than white children. But both reports found that white kids may get infected. Their cases are usually mild, and the death rate among children remains extremely low. So that's the important point here, isn't it? If your kids get the flu, we don't close down the schools. Well, we shouldn't do that when kids get the coronavirus either. President Trump on Monday was abruptly escorted from the White House briefing room just a few minutes after taking the podium for a press briefing, but quickly returned to tell reporters there was a shooting outside of the White House. The reporters, he said, I have no details about it, but the reporters, of course, peppered him for questions and details on what happened. He said he was not taken to the White House bunker, but was rather ushered to the Oval White House. When a reporter asked Mr. President, are you rattled at all, about Mr. President? Trump replied, do I seem rattled to you? And he went on with the press conference. Pretty cool. Democrats left town after failing to reach a deal with them on Phase 4 coronavirus stimulus package. President Trump signed 4 executive orders Saturday in order to help the unemployed and the economy, effectively bypassing Congress to send money to Americans. Democrats had already left town and didn't hesitate to criticize the president's executive orders. This comes after House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer announced in late July that the House would remain in session until a deal on a stimulus package is reached. But that did not happen, of course. It kind of surprised me that the Democrats just left town until the middle of September. They're going to be coming back on September the 14th, and members will have 24 hours notice to return if any votes related to coronavirus come up. Trump's first order establishes a payroll tax cut holiday from August 1st through the end of the year. The second, that's pretty significant. I think I read that that's going to be a $1,200 bonus, if you will, or return of money to earners for their wages for the payroll tax cut. The second would direct the Department of Housing and Urban Development and other federal agencies to forbid evictions. The third would establish a $400 a week addition and paycheck protection program for workers. And the fourth would help give relief for American student loans. So this is a big deal. I think it's a good stopgap measure, and it's certainly a lot less than the $3 trillion proposed by the Democrats, or even the trillion proposed by the Republicans. This apparently is money that's left over from the first three tranches of money that's already been sent out and passed. Despite the short-term executive orders, lawmakers left Washington to return to their home states without a stimulus package and have criticized Trump for signing the order. Pelosi said his actions were absurdly unconstitutional. But Republicans in Congress have defended his actions for signing the executive orders and continue to put blame on Pelosi and the Senate Minority Leader Schumer for not reaching a deal. Senator Scott, our own Senator Scott here from Florida, appreciates that the president took action to help America people and break the logjam of inaction since Pelosi and Schumer are refusing to compromise or negotiate in good faith. Pelosi and Schumer are just focused on the 2020 election and are demanding Congress use this crisis to enable their own liberal agenda with policies that have nothing to do with the coronavirus, that according to Senator Rick Scott. Senator Scott wants Congress to stop laundering taxpayer money intended for coronavirus relief through an inefficient federal agencies, state governments, or bloated bureaucracies, and instead help the families and businesses that have been directly impacted by the crisis. Senator Scott has got away with words. It's great. It's time that Democrats come to the table to actually get something done and stop playing politics with American livelihood, he continued. Senator Kelly Loeffler made similar comments. Once again, President Trump is showing real leadership for the American people while the do-nothing Democrats continue to play politics. The president's executive order are bringing targeted relief immediately to struggling Americans, businesses, and employees. We don't need blue state bailouts. We don't need more of the blue-collar boom and we need more of the blue-collar bloom, and this president has created, and that's exactly what the executive orders will do. And it looks like the markets like it. They had a good day in the market yesterday, and the Dow is up. The futures are indicating a good, strong day today. So we'll see if this stands up to scrutiny, the bill that has the 4 executive orders that the president signed. Trade advisor Peter Navarro is sure President Trump's recent executive actions on coronavirus relief will pass any legal challenge against them. I'm confident that every single one of those orders which cleared to the Office of Legal Counsel, will meet stand up. This according to his interview with Meet the Press. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin also said Trump's orders were cleared by the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, adding that Democrats would have a lot of explaining to do if they challenged this in court. So I think it's been an impressive gambit by the Republicans and by President Trump. He basically called their bluff, and in the 11th hour, he signed these executive orders. And now, what do the Democrats do? They kind of slink off to their home states and campaign, I'm sure, for re-election. But as I thought it through, there's nothing they can really do except to have kind of a knee-jerk reaction. Oh, we'll come to the table now. They would look even more foolish, I think. So the president has signed these orders. Apparently, through the they've been cleared with the Justice Department. Apparently, the money is there, so they're simply redirecting some of the money that's already been promised to the American people through laws that have already been passed. So it's a big deal. Congratulations to President Trump. Checkmate, as you will, as it were. This segment of the show brought to you by their good folks at Johnson's Air Conditioning, Naples' longest established air conditioning company. Visit johnsonsairconditioning.com. Also by Naples Illustrated, bringing you infinite luxury lifestyles. The website is naplesillustrated.com. Okay, coming up, we're going to visit with Kathleen Passidomo, our state senator. That and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
I'm Bob Harden, the host of The Bob Harden Show. One of my favorites for breakfast or lunch is Lulabee's Diner, providing great service, fabulous food, and a rockin' good time. Lulabee's Diner is a throwback to the 60s, complete with great music and a fabulous 60s decor. What I like best is a blend of great food, great value, and terrific service. Most of the friendly waitstaff has been part of Lulabee's for years. I enjoy the great choices for breakfast and lunch, and you'll find the menu has everything and anything to satisfy your taste. Lulabee's offers catering, party platters, lunch boxes, and more. Lulabee's Diner will quickly become one of your favorites for breakfast or lunch. No reservations are needed. Check out the website at lulabees.com and stop by Lulabee's Diner, open from 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. 7 days a week. Lulabee's Diner in the Green Tree Shopping Center at the corner of Immokalee and Airport Pulling Roads. Stop by Lulabee's Diner for fabulous food and for a forever cool, rockin' good time. Gulf Shore Playhouse, devoted to creating professional New York-style theater at its very best and at affordable prices, presents a fabulous new season of productions beginning in November with a world premiere of a one-man show written by and starring the talented Associate Artistic Director of Gulf Shore Playhouse, Jeffrey Binder. Pinup Girls opens in January, singing a cavalcade of hits inspired by real letters from our troops overseas. Inspired by what they find funny, romantic, heartbreaking, and sexy, the ladies put on a show that celebrate the guys and gals who fight to defend our country. Bang Bang opens in March, written by legendary actor of Monty Python fame, John Cleese. You'll surely be wiping away tears of laughter with this one. William Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream opens in March. Meddling parents, impetuous young lovers, and cunning fairies collide in Shakespeare's enchanting classic. Another Revolution by Jacqueline Bircher opens in May. You won't want to miss this timely new work about finding hope in one another through the uncertainty of the world around us. What a terrific season of productions. Tickets for this great new season are available now. Tickets start at only $38. Tickets can be purchased by calling the box office at 866-811-4111 or visiting the website GulfShorePlayhouse.org. We'll see you at the show.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by Gulf Shore Playhouse, bringing you professional New York-style theater at its very best. Great organization doing professional theater at its best. You can find out more by visiting the website GulfShorePlayhouse.org. Coming up, we're going to visit with President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education, Larry Reed. Right now we have with us Kathleen Pasadomo, our state senator. Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, it's nice to see the curve, kind of 7-day curve of cases kind of dropping right now. I think we're up to as high as 220 cases a day being reported, now down to 90. Any thoughts?
Well, we're hoping that this time the curve is flattened or will flatten out, and it's vitally important because, you know, the kids are going to be going back to school and people are very nervous about that. So, hopefully this will do it for a while, but, you know, until we find a real vaccine, we're going to live like this.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's very, people are very anxious.
They are. I mean, I guess I've taken the view that I think there's been a tremendous overreaction and responding more to fear than the virus itself. But, you know, there was a report that I think it was 97,000 last 2 weeks of July had contracted coronavirus. It makes me very suspicious of why this kind of information gets the headlines just before schools open. But it makes me wonder how many cases before that. But what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, it's some of the press like to, it's almost fear-mongering, that kind of thing. And,
yeah.
And, you know, it's the old adage that sells papers. But you know, one of the things that is a problem is, you know, when the universities and the colleges go back to school, all those kids that have been staying home for the summer are all going to converge. And, you know, they don't socially distance at all.
Yeah.
And so we don't know what that's going to do, particularly in some of the college towns. So, you know, we just have to hope that they are a little bit more cognizant of the issue.
So I saw some news headlines about contact tracing, and I didn't follow up or read it carefully, but is that an issue?
Well, it can be. For example, if the way it works is if you test positive, then the Department of Health is supposed to call you and find out who you've been in contact with over the last several days.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is so that those people can be contacted, you know, and self-isolate and that kind of thing. The problem has been that if the test, they take the test and don't get results for 10 days or so, tracing who you've been with is almost impossible because unless you've basically been sitting at home, you're out and about, go to the store, you go to work, it's impossible to track people down. So
yeah.
We either have to get people immediately or they just don't do it at all. And Immokalee's been a particular issue, but in Immokalee's different because it's such a small community that if someone develops COVID, they've basically been with everyone.
Right.
Because it's such a small community.
Yeah. So, for our listeners' benefit, there's about 2,000 confirmed cases in Immokalee, and it's a community of, I think, about 25,000 people. So that's a big number on one hand. On the other hand,
yeah,
makes me wonder if perhaps herd immunity isn't going to just... it seems to me the number of cases in Immokalee is slowing down as well. I think perhaps confirming in my mind, anyhow, that herd immunity is working here in Collier County.
Well, I don't... My understanding, and I had talked to the Department of Health officials, and the sheer numbers for herd immunity to develop is huge, and we're just not going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons Immokalee slowed down a little bit is that the seasonal workers had left in July, gone up to North Carolina. So they move with the crops, and the issue is they're coming back for the fall harvest.
Interesting.
So, you know, there's a lot of movement, and we'll see what happens if there's an uptick. You know, and we have to be, you know, we have to guard a lot because Immokalee also, a lot of the workers who work in Naples live in Immokalee. A lot of the construction workers and the lawn maintenance workers, service workers, in restaurants, et cetera, a lot of them live in Immokalee. And so if people are coming back from up north and bringing COVID and the numbers go up, it'll also affect the coast because, you know, you're going to have all those workers. It's a terrible thing. I still look at a lot of our older folks. The one good thing that Florida has done, and even though a lot of families don't like it, is to protect those people who are in assisted living facilities and nursing homes by shutting them down completely, and that has helped.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we'll wait and see. So, before I let you go, I did want to get your thoughts on, I talked to a real estate attorney who suggested that business is booming down here. He said to me he had 32 closings in 1 week, and I thought, in this kind of economy made me wonder. But he says that a lot of this business is snowbirds. It's urban flight, people wanting to get out of New York, big cities where there's a lot of problems, and, they just really don't want to stay there.
Yeah, that I've noticed that, too. The real estate practice is very busy. Houses are not on the market that long. Prices are going up, fortunately not as crazy as they did before the downturn in 2006. But the high-end properties, they're selling like hotcakes almost. It'll be an interesting to see what happens, because a lot of people that are buying these properties are not intending to live here right away. So it's sort of like a second home. And so are they going to rent it out? Or are they going to ultimately become Florida residents? I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I heard one story, and this could be apocryphal. I believe it's true because I trust the person that told me to. But an individual bought a small apartment in New York for, I think it was $1.4 million, and ended up selling it a few months later for $297,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, that's wanting to get out bad. I mean, but when you read the headlines of what's happening in Washington, D.C., and what's happening in New York City, some of these urban centers, first of all, there's going to be, because of coronavirus, people are beginning to see that, hey, I can work at home anyhow and get the job done.
That's true.
And then compounding that with the concern about lack of law and order, you can understand why people want to go to a place like the beautiful Paradise Coast.
Well, that's true. The big issue, though, is a lot of the people that are moving down here have a little liberal bent. And the first thing they do, and you and I talked about this, they come down here and, find their piece of paradise, and the first thing they say is, you're not spending enough money.
Well, we've got to have some sort of a training or indoctrination or primer on good thinking, because we can't just continue to do this to cities of what's happened up north. We don't want that down here. So, Kathleen, I just genuinely appreciate your commentary here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and have a great day.
You as well. Thank you, Kathleen. All right, coming up, we're going to visit with Boo Mortensen up in Madison, Wisconsin. We'll find out what's going on up there, that and more, right here in the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network. Blue Provence Restaurant is a favorite dining destination for many Neapolitans, including Lyndon myself. Blue Provence, located in a historic building in the heart of Old Naples at Creighton Cove, offers a mix of French bistro cooking with bold, fresh Floridian flavors. Experience award-winning cuisine at Blue Provence and enjoy one of Florida's most extensive, eclectic, and fun wine cellars. Dining your choice of the popular Eden Bar, the intimate Courtyard Garden, or the beautiful Provençal Caribbean Dining Room. Enjoy a wonderful and memorable evening in a casual and relaxed atmosphere that includes a taste of Provençal hospitality. Blue Provence is open 7 days a week, all year round. Visit BlueProvenceNaples.com for reservations, everyday specials, and coming events. That's BlueProvenceNaples.com or call 261-8239. That's 261-8239. Blue Provence, French restaurant in the heart of Old Naples.
Do Do you have an extra auto you'd like to donate to charity? Maximize your tax deduction, support your favorite charity, and help a local child in need by calling Naples Auto Donation Center. Naples Auto Donation Center is a not-for-profit licensed car dealer. Just call NADC at 692-9840 and they'll take it from there. You get a properly documented tax deduction for whatever the vehicle actually sells for. Your designated beneficiary charity gets half the profit after fix-up costs, and the net revenue generated by NADC goes to Friends of Foster Children to provide tutoring and other enrichment activities for foster children the government doesn't provide. And NADC is also one of the few places in Collier County that sells inexpensive cars that actually run to folks who would otherwise not be able to afford one. It's a real win-win. Call Naples Auto Donation Center at 692-9840 or visit the website nadckids.com. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability, creating policies and programs to get able-bodied folks off of welfare and back to work. And that's just one of the initiatives. I hope you'll find out more by visiting thefga.org. Coming up, we're going to visit with Seton Motley, the founder and president of Less Government. Right now we have with us Boo Mortensen. It's time to find out what's new with Boo. Well, she used to be in Madison, Wisconsin, but she's down here right now. Boo, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure. What a treat to be back down in Candyland.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And, you know, I live downtown in Madison, and it is so profoundly different there than the downtown in Naples. My son and I went to a restaurant in downtown Naples the other night, and its Fifth Avenue is vibrant. It's open. People are walking down the streets. Most of the businesses are open. A lot of the restaurants are open. People are sitting outside enjoying the weather. In Madison, it probably looks like Seattle or downtown Chicago. It's boarded up.
Yeah.
It's still, for the most part, boarded up. It's quiet. People are afraid to come downtown. They think that it's dangerous. They don't want to go to the restaurants. The restaurants, the few that are open, what a tragedy! It just shows you the difference.
Well, if you really want to see a contrast, a seat to table. You may be aware of the lawsuit that Alfie Oakes has filed, a federal lawsuit about the masks and so forth. Well, so there's no mask requirement there. Some people wear them, some people don't. But Linda went by, and she said it was hard to find a place to park, first of all, if you can imagine that at this time of year. But second of all, she says that everybody's smiling, everybody's happy, waving at each other. It's just totally different than the environment that I'm sure much different than Madison and Wisconsin, but even here in Naples.
Yes, he said he'd rather wear handcuffs than wear a mask.
Yeah. So,
you know, I suppose if you don't want to wear a mask, I think that they didn't call your county vote that you have to in a business.
No, well, see, a business that they said if you for some reason can't wear a mask for health reasons, let's say, the business has to give you some sort of an accommodation. That was part of the ruling. And by the way, this is not a criminal offense. So if you it's actually the code enforcement that's responsible for doing this. And they're the ones that go by and give the fines and the warnings. Now, Alfie Oakes has already been, his first fine, I think, was $105. And the second is about $255. I think the maximum fine is $500. So I just wonder about, and I've been to businesses where there's no enforcement of this thing, so it's kind of interesting.
See, in Madison, they won't even let you in. You cannot go in unless you have a mask on.
Yeah.
There's signs in front of everything that you're not allowed to go in, and it's the whole Dane County is like that, so you have no option. Most places you go to, they check your temperature before you even go in.
No kidding.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I take issue. Yesterday I did a story, apparently this dental practice up in New York City said that they've got a new treatment for mask mouth. It creates dryness in the mouth. They're seeing teeth crumble, new gum disease, all kinds of things going on because people are wearing masks all day. So there are some side effects, unintended consequences. And there's also, it's very dubious whether it really does anything to prevent the spread of the coronavirus anyhow.
Well, they say that you get less droplets, and if you're exposed to less droplets, it helps. Or if you do get it, it's not as severe. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
I'll wear the mask. If you got to wear the mask, I'll wear the mask.
Well, me too. If that's a requirement in a business, my personal view, it's your business. You can run it the way you want to. I have the choice about whether I want to patronize your business, so I can make my decisions based on that. That's interesting.
Talk about business. Who do you think is going to, who do you think Biden, they say today he's supposed to pick somebody. Think it'll be a black woman?
Well, it better be, because a group of over 100 black male leaders declaring presumptive presidential candidate or nominee, but Joe Biden, he has to name a black woman as his running mate. They sent him a letter on yesterday, and it has a lot of famous people on it, apparently, Hollywood types and so forth, but they're saying, the co-signer said, you got to hire, it disgusts us that black women are not just being vetted in the VP process, but unfairly criticized and scrutinized, they say. So, what do you think? I look at the list, I just don't know who he's going to pick. What do you think?
I don't know. Susan Rice?
She's never been elected to an office, and I think she really is in the crosshairs of this investigation. John Durham is, which is another interesting story, has to come out with something before Labor Day to start, indicting people and so forth. So she might be in the crosshairs of his investigation.
Well, do you know that 59% of the voters, including 49% of Democrats, do not think Biden will serve the entire 4 years.
Right.
I don't know if they think he's going to drop dead or something, but so it makes the appointment of the VP all that more important.
Right.
Isn't that interesting that half the Democrats don't think he's going to serve, yet they'll still vote for him?
Well, and here's
Which
the other
crazy.
Here's the other thing. There's still rumors circulating that think that he's not going to be the nominee. I don't know how that's going to happen, but nevertheless, that's one of the considerations. And the other thing that's going on is that, if he's selected, will he get voted? Will he get elected? What do you think?
I'm sorry. The grandkids just came in, so I just got distracted with everything that's going on.
Okay. So I was asking your opinion about who, do you think Biden, in any case, could possibly beat President Donald Trump?
No, if all things were normal, but this is not a normal time. My concern is that there's so many people that despise and hate Trump so much.
Mm-hmm.
They'll vote for Mickey Mouse as a vote against, not for Mickey Mouse, but against Trump.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a huge group of those people. I don't know. They say, well, the silent majority. How do we know there's a silent majority?
Well, I think
it may be a silent minority.
Right. I just think in the last analysis, people want their property and their person to be safe, their family to be safe. In the last analysis, the president is the president of law and order. And quite at the enthusiasm level for people who support Trump is quite high. I don't see the enthusiasm level quite high for Biden supporters. In fact, Biden did a town hall for the Hispanic community. This is a national town hall. 186 people participated. Can you imagine?
186?
Yes, can you imagine? So my point is this. I think there's going to be a muted effort for Democrats to vote, whereas I think all people who support Trump will cast their vote. They want to vote.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know. It's kind of scary. These are scary times in more ways than one. Look what's going on in Chicago. It's absolutely crazy in Chicago where they've lifted the bridges.
Yeah.
So you can't get downtown. They stopped a lot of the trains and buses
Chicago.
No.
Yeah.
And they've said that, the mayor, Lori Lightfoot, is not holding the troublemakers accountable.
Yeah.
That they're just, she's just kind of letting them go. The place is as bad as Oregon.
And Seattle.
Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, I think we mentioned this, but the chief, a police chief in Seattle has resigned because they're going to cut 100 officers and slash the department's budget. Reimagining the, what's this, reimagining law enforcement of the police, it's just unbelievable to me.
Well, the whole thing is really scary. God, would you want to be a cop right now?
No.
I give these guys so much credit for going out on the line and doing this.
I do,
this
too.
It's terrible, especially in those big cities.
Yeah.
It's a cotton-picking free-for-all.
It is. Boo Mortensen, it's just great to have you back down here on the Paradise Coast, and really appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Enjoy the peace and solitude in Naples.
Absolutely. Thank you, Boo. All right, coming up, we're going to visit with Seton Motley, the founder and president of Less Government. That and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
For the best in food and drink, as well as great live entertainment, go to the Dog 2 Sports and Music Bar. Formerly known as Weekend Willie's, the Dog 2 Sports and Music Bar has terrific new local owners offering a great new upscale decor and a fabulous new menu. Linda and I are weekly regulars to hear live blues, but you can stop by anytime for great food and drink, to watch your favorite sporting event, or to hear great live entertainment 5 nights a week. The Dog 2 Sports and Music Bar is located at 5310 Shirley Street, just off Pine Ridge Road, and it's open from 11 a.m. until close every day. Visit the website dogtoothnaples.com or call 431-7004. That's 431-7004. I hope we'll see you there. Did you know St. Matthew's House operates the only emergency homeless shelters in Collier County? St. Matthew's House provided more than 500,000 hot meals to those in need last year, and since 2010, 527 men and women have graduated from the St. Matthew's House Justin's Place Addiction Recovery Program. For over 30 years, St. Matthew's House has provided innovative solutions to fight homelessness, hunger, substance abuse, and poverty in Southwest Florida. And you can help St. Matthew's House in this life-transforming work by patronizing the St. Matthew's House thrift stores, Cafe M25, car wash and detailing center, and award-winning catering operations. For more information, visit stmatthewshouse.org. That's stmatthewshouse.org. St. Matthew's House is a 501c3 not-for-profit organization and does not solicit government funding.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
I'd like to say a word about one of our advertisers, Lula Bee's Diner. I think they do a great job serving breakfast or lunch right there in the Green Tree Shopping Center. Big supporters of St. Matthew's House, also support St. Matthew's House. They do a great job as well. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with Larry Reed, the President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. Right now we have with us Seton Motley, the founder and president of Less Government. Seton, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Seton. Tell us about Less Government.
Yeah, we exist to reduce the size, scope, and sphere of influence of government, and all I noticed this morning was, for 4 years, we rushed as the evilest of evil, and we shouldn't talk to them, and, oh, this morning, hey, they have a vaccine, we should collude with them to get it.
did you read that Putin apparently said we're the first to introduce the vaccine? Of course, it hasn't been through the stage 3 testing.
Yeah, I mean, we probably have 4 or 5 viruses. vaccines at least that level of development. We just require a more rigorous process before we get there.
But he said he said he's already given it to his daughter. So
once again, we can trust Putin now. It's okay to trust Putin now.
That's right.
These people are idiots. Anyway, sorry.
So hey, you wrote a column about Biden's Build Back Never. I found it just so interesting. What great analysis, I think, of his campaign and what's going on. Maybe you can tell us about it.
Well, yeah. This is a guy who in 88 ran for president because he's been around since the Johnson administration, and I mean Andrew, not LBJ, and he got kicked out of the 88 campaign for plagiarizing from a communist member of parliament in Britain. Well, here he is now ripping off Trump. This is Trump's, this is Build Back, this is a Make America Great Again. Well, what he's trying to say is the Build Back Better basically says a couple of unspoken things, which is, one, Trump had built it.
Yeah.
From the ash heap that he inherited from the Obama-Biden administration. Trump can build it back because, you know, the assumption is, you know, oh, Trump will build it back. We'll build it back better.
Yeah.
So he's making some, you know, unspoken compliments to Trump in that phrase. And, of course, a lot of what he's, you know, what he's stolen is the overarching theme of America First. But then, of course, the policies make no sense whatsoever, and they're antithetical to building back at all. The Green New Deal, which is, you know, an assault on manufacturing of any sort. Trump promised, you remember, this is the evolution of this process. Trump promised to bring back manufacturing jobs. Obama said you'd need a magic wand to do it.
Yeah.
Well, Trump did it.
Right.
Trump brought back manufacturing. And one of the ways he did it was rolling back ridiculous over-regulation of the Environmental Protection Agency.
And reducing the corporate income tax.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of policies, but one of the key ones was, you know, he's like, it takes us 8 years to build a building because the EPA has all these tests you have to go through to get approved to build the building. It's absurd.
Right.
So he rolled all, and of course this applies to farmers too. You know, they had the Waters of the U.S. rule, which basically turned, you know, if you got a puddle of water on your land after a rain, it became a navigable waterway, and you couldn't use your land to plant crops and or do anything on your land.
Right.
And he got rid of all of these things. But, you know, I've said we've got to view farmers as food manufacturers. They're manufacturers.
Right.
They just manufacture food instead of iPhones or sneakers or whatever. And by the way, I would, on my hierarchy of things, I would put food higher than iPhones and sneakers.
Right.
But so all of these regulations that he's rolled back, all the taxes, as you said, the taxes, the regulations, none of, you know, Biden is saying, you know, let's build back better, but you can't build back with what he's proposing.
Right. In fact,
the higher taxes, higher regulations, the Green New Deal is an assault on anybody who does anything economic.
Right. So, you know, Seton, I was listening to him, he was in his basement talking, and he was basically saying, it sounded like all of Trump's ideas, he wants to bring corporations, business back to America, he wants to...
Yeah. Which, by the way, he spent 8 years punting out of the country in the Obama administration.
Right.
You know, what is he, a yo-yo? We'll send him out for 8 years, and then I'll bring him back. You know, it's you know, all of the this is a continuation of what we went through. You know, I've said this a million times. For the first year plus of the Trump administration, everybody was attacking him. He's undoing everything Obama did. It seems to he's got this vendetta against anything Obama, and he wants to undo the Obama legacy. Well, then of course it starts working because he's rolling back taxes and regulations, and then year two is, oh, this is just a continuation of the Obama recovery from the...
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You can't spend a year saying he's undoing everything Obama did and then give Obama credit when it works. That doesn't make any sense. And this is what Biden is doing.
Yeah.
He's the unspoken assumption is, well, gee, it appears that this messaging of bringing jobs back to America and then actually doing it resonated with the American people, so I'll just steal it.
And, you know, the other side of this, too, it's the president said it yesterday in his news conference, in his press conference, but, you know, the whole idea, if Biden is elected as president, you may as well, he's going to cave to China, he's going to cave to all these other, everything that's happened up to this point is
going to... He got his son $1.5 billion from a Chinese government bank.
Yeah. And by the way,
how do you think he's How do you think he's got a basement in his beach house in Delaware as a career civil servant?
Yeah.
Where did all that money come from?
Seton, and there was a recently, and I don't have the details here in front of me, but a raid to the FBI raided a couple of locations, and they're going to reclaim the properties, but it has to do with money laundering and all kinds of things from the Ukraine. I think something's going to break here pretty big and pretty soon, I'm saying in August.
You know, I've been hoping, because, of course, you know, we've spent decades now watching Democrats get away with crap that they absolutely should not get away with.
Right.
And, you know, no punishment. And we get excited when we, you know, Trey Gowdy catches someone committing perjury, but then no perjury charges are ever filed.
Right.
You know, and all of this. And I'm hopeful that Trump, of course, understands television very well. He was a very successful reality show host for many years. I'm hoping that he understands, you know, what is the equivalent of sweeps week in a political campaign? October.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
That's sweeps week for a campaign. So I'm hoping that Durham and Barr and all our law enforcement agencies come out, you know, drop the hammers in October during sweeps week.
So there's some sort of a rule that you cannot have any, you know, any claims or charges against the campaign or people associated with the campaign within 60 days of November the 3rd, let's say. So the important thing, I think...
Who's, is that a law?
That is a policy by the Justice Department. So, to me, it's very important that something happen by Labor Day. In other words, John Durham has to come out and start this process.
Well, then, if there's a 60-day thing and they're adhering to it, well, obviously, we're running out of time. We're less than 30 days on that clock.
That's exactly right, Seton. So, my hope is that John Durham will start. We'll start to see. I don't know if he's going to come out with a report, but I hope we'll begin to see either plea deals, you know, with people lower on the pyramid that will start to sing about other people involved in the process. Or,
well, you saw last week Sally Yates attempt to throw Comey under the bus.
Right.
When she said he was acting rogue. Well, of course, we know she's lying, because right after he got back from that meeting where he allegedly went rogue, he texted somebody else in the Obama administration said, mission accomplished, meaning I delivered the package that we discussed needed to be delivered.
Right.
So the rogue claim is completely bogus. But what you're seeing is Sally Yates' attempt to throw Comey under the bus.
Self-preservation. Seton Motley, again, the founder and president of Less Government. I'm going to encourage you to just visit lessgovernment.org. Also, Less Government on Facebook. Seton, always appreciate your commentary here on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure indeed. All right, coming up, we're going to visit with Larry Reed, the president emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education. We're going to do that and more right here on the Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of the Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Do you or a family member suffer from chronic pain in your knees, hips, or shoulders? Joint pain can be a nagging and serious problem requiring expert and compassionate care. I know I'm Bob Harden, the host of The Bob Harden Show. Until 2006, I was suffering debilitating pain and deformity in my knees. I couldn't enjoy biking or golf or even sleep without chronic pain as a constant companion. Thanks to Dr. George Markovich and the professional staff at the Institute for Orthopedic Surgery and Sports Medicine, my pain is gone and I'm back to doing the activities I enjoy with no pain. I have a lifestyle I could only imagine prior to knee surgery, and you can too. Call the Institute for Orthopedic Surgery and Sports Medicine. They will thoroughly evaluate your condition, provide personalized, state-of-the-art treatment, and help you relieve your pain and get back to your active lifestyle. At the Institute for Orthopedic Surgery and Sports Medicine, your care will be professionally managed through every phase of your recovery. For an initial consultation, call the Institute for Orthopedic Surgery and Sports Medicine, located off Tamiami Trail in Bonita Springs, at 482-5399. That's 482-5399. You listen to The Bob Harden Show, so why not market your company to our loyal listeners? Ads are played live on each show and then archived so listeners can hear the show and your ad at their convenience. Each advertising package includes a banner on bobharden.com with a link to your website at no extra charge. Join Lulabee's Diner, Johnson's Air Conditioning, Blue Provence, and many others who advertise on the show. Call me at 598-3889. That's 598-3889. Or send an email to bobharden@hotmail.com to design an ad program that's just right for your business and your budget. You'll be pleasantly surprised at the cost and the value. Several advertisers have been with me for years. Find out why by calling 598-3889 or send me an email to bobharden@hotmail.com. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability, creating policies and programs to get able-bodied folks off of welfare and back to work. I proudly serve on the board, and you can find out more by visiting the website, thefga.org. We have with us Larry Reed. He is the president emeritus of a terrific organization. It's called the Foundation for Economic Education. Larry, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bob.
Tell us about the Foundation for Economic Education, please, Larry.
Okay. We're an educational foundation focused on educating and inspiring young people of high school and college age in ideas of individual liberty, free markets, small government, private property, and personal character. And your listeners can learn more about us at our website, fee.org.
Absolutely. And if you have young people in your life, grandchildren, children, whatever, just introduce them to the Foundation for Economic Education. Again, focusing not only on the rule of law, but also on character. And it's just a great experience for anybody who gets involved. I've talked to kids. So again, fee.org, F-E-E.org. So Larry, you wrote a column about a great singer. It was, what was her name? Jessica Lynn, is it?
Jenny
Lind, yes, from Sweden, the Swedish Nightingale who sang her way to fame and fortune in America. Great story, and maybe you could tell us about it.
Okay. Jenny Lind was from Sweden, and she was quite a person of fame around the world in the middle part of the 19th century. She met up with P.T. Barnum, of Barnum and Bailey Circus fame, who decided that she needed to come to America and do a tour and would be wildly popular, and he was certainly right about that. So he brought her over in 1850, 170 years ago. It was on the 1st of September. And for the better part of a year, under his management, she toured the United States, and believe it or not, before the spring of 1851, less than a year, she had earned more than $10 million in today's money. It was one of the quickest and biggest fortunes ever made in this country by a foreigner, and she was wildly popular, sell-out crowds everywhere.
Yeah, and to keep in mind, there was no income tax at the points at that time as well. So, I mean, when she made a dollar, she kept a dollar, which was pretty impressive. But she, you know, and apparently she really packed the houses, and she was so committed to her audience and their well-being as well as, you know, charitable organizations around the world.
Yes, she had a reputation in this country even before coming here. Word of her incredible voice had preceded her arrival. And when she came in 1850, at the docks in New York, she was just crowds gathered to meet her and greet her when she arrived. And everywhere she went, cities from north to south and to the west, for the next 9 or 10 months, she packed the house, and they kept adding additional performances for her in one city after another.
Right, and she was apparently, and I've forgotten where is it Iowa or someplace that she'd had a couple of hundred people in, was it a barn? Or I've forgotten now the details of it, but maybe you could tell us that story.
Yeah, that was in a place in Madison, Indiana.
Yeah,
800 people had crammed into, get this, a pork butcher's shed. It doesn't sound like a very pleasant place for a concert, but 800 people had crammed in there to hear the Swedish Nightingale, Jenny Lind. But the organizer, the local person, refused to pay the agreed fee. And P.T. Barnum, who was the overall sponsor, he wanted to cancel the whole event. And it was Jenny who refused. She said no, she'd be happy to sing in a pork butcher's shed. It was not the people's fault, she said, and she was ready to sing. And so the concert went ahead. Then they went on to Cincinnati, where they had a crowd of 2,000 the first night, and it continued to grow over several more nights.
So, and Larry, and here's the thing, too. She was not only committed to her audience, but also, as I understand it, she was extremely charitably minded as well.
Yeah, this is the remarkable thing. I mean, nobody would have quarreled with her if she had kept every penny that she earned and invested it or just lived lavishly. But she chose to give almost all of it to the charities, and they were all over the world, many of them in America. She would just give the money away after earning it, and but she was careful about what charity she wanted to support. Mostly it was for musical scholarships or for educational purposes where music played a role. But the charities were in America and in Britain and in Sweden, and she was loved for that, but you couldn't have blamed her if she had just kept it.
A remarkable story indeed. So it's just, again, one of these stories that if you just keep in mind that something like this can be very inspirational and informative for a young person, because it really speaks not only to talent and abilities, but also speaks to character as well. And I think that's so important.
Yeah, I do too. And fortunately, there are still sites and things around America and abroad that honor her name. We have two towns in the United States called Jenny Lind, Arkansas, and Jenny Lind, California.
No kidding.
And she's honored at Mammoth Cave in Kentucky and on the Swedish 50-krona banknote, among numerous recognitions worldwide.
Just an incredible story indeed. Jenny Lind, again, I've never heard of her before until I read your column, but it's so inspirational. There was a movie about her as well.
Yeah, it was The Greatest Showman. It came out in 2017, starring Hugh Jackman in the role of P.T. Barnum, and Jenny Lind figures into it. I didn't personally care for the film. It got middling reviews, but nonetheless, it was nice that something in more recent times was done on the big screen to call attention to her.
Again, Larry Reed, the President Emeritus of the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org is the website, FEE.org. Larry, just genuinely appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bob.
My pleasure indeed. Well, that's a wrap here on today's show. If you enjoy the show, I hope you'll tell your friends word of mouth. It's kind of organic growth of what we're experiencing right now. I do have a newsletter that I'm sending out each day after the show, talking about the content of the show and what to look forward to tomorrow. If you'd like to receive that, you can send me an email at bobharden@hotmail.com, bobharden@hotmail.com. Also, appreciate your comments about the show. Always would appreciate that as well. I hope you'll join us tomorrow. We're going to visit with Bob Levy. Bob is the chairman of the Cato Institute. Bob also is the guy who is the co-sponsor, co-counsel, if you will, for the Heller gun case in Washington, D.C. He actually found the person who complained about the fact he couldn't have a gun license in Washington, D.C., took it all the way through the court system, all the way up to the Supreme Court, and ended up winning. This probably goes back, 7-8 years now, I've forgotten, but irrespective, Bob at the time did not even own a gun, but nevertheless felt that the rule of law was important and wanted it enforced in Washington, D.C. So he is the chairman of the Cato Institute. He's also a constitutional scholar, and we'll continue our discussion about Supreme Court cases. We'll also visit with Andrew Joppa, and he's a professor. He's also the author of a terrific book, Josephus of Oz. He'll be with us as well as Larry Bell, endowed professor at the University of Houston in space architecture. So he designs spaces for extreme situations and for places like Mars and the moon and so forth. He's also the author. He has extreme intellectual curiosity and scientific curiosity. His latest book, which I just started reading, How Everything Happened, Including Us, it starts about 13 billion years ago and goes up to today. Also, if you're interested in climate change, I encourage you to read his book, It's called Scared Witless, The Prophets and Profits of Climate Doom. A terrific read as well. In any event, I hope you can make it a great day on the Paradise Coast or wherever you are. Namaste.
Thanks so much for listening to The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network. For more information and audio files of previous shows, visit www.bobharden.com.